Good morning, listeners. Phil Bourne here with Earth Chat, the weekly show brought to you by Beam Mitchell Environment Group. I'm standing in for Pete Lockyer, who's building a sustainable rice straw bale house in the Punjab in India. So g'day to you, Pete. First off, I'd like to acknowledge that we're broadcasting here from Tungurung country. So all honour to you, Tungurung mob, our elders past, present and future. Today's Earth Chat is focusing on a book that's about to be launched called Retro Suburbia. This is a book that's been authored by David Holmgren, who's the co-originator of permaculture back with Bill Mollison in the day. It's subtitled The Downshifter's Guide to a Resilient Future. And with me here today are two people that are instrumental in the production of this book. We have Beck Lowe from Heathcote, who is project manager, and as it says on the fly on the leaf of the book, chief text wrangler. Good morning to you, Beck.
Morning, Phil.
And we also have Richard Telford, local Seymour Identity, who's also credited as project manager and designer. Good morning to you, Richard.
Morning, Phil.
So to start with, I'd like to, before we go into details of the book, just get a bit of background briefing about sort of who you are and how you came to be involved in this mega project, bringing a whole lot of information to produce this. So Beck, yourself, what's your background in terms of connection with this?
Well, I've been involved in permaculture for over 20 years now. It's pretty much my life. I'm a permaculture teacher mostly, but I also love books and I love reading and always keen to get the latest books on permaculture and related topics. And David Holmgren's a colleague. We teach together, all part of the Central Victoria permaculture mob. And, you know, the chance to jump in and get involved in this book, I thought was, you know, really something I wanted to do. So jumped into it wholeheartedly and took on various roles, as you said, project manager and text wrangler, is sort of very vague for all the things I ended up doing. But it was very much like that. There was a whole lot of different people coming in and working on it in different ways.
All right, we'll get into a bit more of that detail later. What about you, Richard? What brought you to this production?
Yeah, my interest in permaculture sort of started around 20 years ago as well, where I met David in Western Australia while he was travelling around. And I've been, since sort of working with him back in 2000 on the principal icons, I have been supporting the publishing of his books and other works. And this project really began probably about 4 years ago for me when I started helping draw out the book from him. Yeah.
So, all right, before we get into exact details of the book, because I do want to sort of go through it a bit with what it's about, but I'd like a thumbnail sketch for listeners about how you would describe permaculture, just in case people aren't overly familiar with it. Because often I hear people talk about it and see it as just a type of gardening, but I think it's a bit more than that. So just, again, a bit of background on how you would describe what is permaculture.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a shame that everyone sort of thinks of gardening. I mean, growing food's huge. Like, we need food to survive, so food and permaculture go together, and that makes a lot of sense. But it's also about every other aspect of life. We can't just have our food supply being sustainable and just have our gardens. Every other aspect of life's got to work as well. So permaculture is basically about living well and living resiliently and living in the boundaries of the planet.
And for you, Richard, you've done these icons, so there's sort of principles associated with permaculture. How would you sort of summarise that sort of approach?
Well, I really describe it as a design system based on natural systems. So it's turning to nature as inspiration for how we can design sustainably and live more lightly on the planet.
Okay. Sounds a noble direction. Now let's get onto the book. Looking at it here in front of me, it's more an encyclopedia than a book you're going to just have a cursory glance with. It's 592 pages long. It's huge. How would you go about describing this so we can get an idea of what is this book, what's in it, and what's it trying to achieve?
Okay, well, Some people might want to read it cover to cover, but it is the sort of book you can dip into, so don't be put off by the size and, you know, some people call it a phone book. It's also rich in pictures. I know you can't see that, but, yeah very colourful.
Beautiful photos too.
Our aim really was to make it very accessible for people, so you can dip in and out of it, look at the pictures, read bits that are, you know, relevant to you and perhaps find some things that aren't. The basic structure's four sections, introductory. We talk about the built field, which is all the structures and infrastructure. Talk about the biological, the gardens, growing food, and then the big section is behaviour and what we can do to change our behaviour.
Yeah. Richard, you got any thoughts on description of the book and what it's trying to achieve? What is retro suburbia? What's its aim here in terms of, like, you've got all this good stuff in it, but what's it trying to achieve? Has it got a particular framework?
It's really looking at how we can make effective change as a society. Mm. And the real low-hanging fruit is in our suburbs.
Mm.
Permaculture has been had a bigger impact earlier on in regional areas, but now it's sort of bringing it back home to where it actually started, which was in an urban environment.
Mm.
And suburbs are sort of just right for permaculture, and that's part of what retro suburbia is trying to get across. We've got, you know, Australian houses on quite big blocks where there's plenty of room to, you know, create your gardens, do a bit of whatever, share a house, because our houses are very big. But you've also got neighbours and communities and streets where you don't feel isolated. So it's like this sweet spot of having community and people around you and resources, but also having enough room to be resilient and a bit self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm. Can we have a look at some of the detail in the book? You said there's sort of four sections to it. Take us through some of them, like setting the scene. It's talking about key challenges, and then Aussie Street, the past and the future of suburbia. What's Aussie Street?
Aussie Street's very fun. Some listeners may well have heard David's presentation on Aussie Street. He's been developing it for
over 10 years.
Yeah, over 10 years. So it's a story about Aussie Street, which starts in the 50s and what this particular four houses are like, and it goes right up until the 2020s and the changes over time, and looking at, you know, what's happened to society and, you know, suburbia in that time, and then what could happen potentially just into the very near future to become a really resilient and happy place to live.
Mm. Mm. So in some ways, is it a critique of current suburbia in terms of what we could be doing?
Yeah, so it's looking at how suburbia has evolved with a story, a fictitious story. But one of the things that I really love about it is it ties together all the different elements of the book and puts it into one story, and then it goes into further detail in the book that sort of breaks down more about each sort of individual element that's changed.
Yeah, okay. In that earlier part, David talks quite a bit about energy descent. Now, I think listeners are probably familiar with the challenges we have with climate change and therefore the resilience about what connects with that concept. Energy descent, what's that on about?
Well, basically using less energy, exactly how it sounds. We've got a society that's very much propped up by fossil fuels, and we're living unsustainably, and it's not going to last one way or another. I mean, we've got the issues of climate change on the one hand, and the other hand, it's not a resource that's going to last forever. So to keep going, we've basically got to find ways of you know, downshifting in a way and using less energy, but that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, a worse future. It can mean a more connected, more resilient, you know, nicer place to live.
So, go on, Richard. Yeah.
One of the things I want to mention there was the economic impacts that fossil fuel is having on our society and how it's becoming more and more expensive to extract that energy, and there's more and more people who want to use that energy. Mm. So that's one of the big impacts that it's going to have on our local communities and a real reason to adapt.
Mm. I think one of the things that often happens when we talk about climate change and energy descent is that it does invoke fear in people because, you know, oh, what does it mean? I have to give up. Whereas this book, I gather, is trying to take through, okay, that is the description of what's happening, but what does it mean in terms of how we might change so that it doesn't reduce and, in fact, potentially or arguably enhances our standard of living. Is that fair comment?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the big pushes of this book, to say we could live a better life. Mm. You know, all these things aren't necessarily making us happier. And there's lots of other ways to live a really fulfilling life with a, you know, good family, good community. Staying at home more is a big part of it, enjoying what you've got at home rather than having to rush here and rush there. And yeah, there's so many reasons that an energy descent future could be a lot more fulfilling.
And there are some real life examples in here in the book.
Okay.
Some case studies of people that are living that type of life.
Yeah, including Richard.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So it goes from, as we said, setting the scene, this built field, patterns of human habitats. Talks a lot about things ranging from staying warm in winter, cool in summer, through to water harvesting and storage. What's water harvesting? How do you harvest water?
Well, of course, most people in the country be familiar with collecting water and sticking in a tank.
Yeah.
But there are other ways to harvest water, like collecting rainwater runoff and getting that to store in the ground, which can be taken up by plants.
Yeah. Okay.
And having good quality soil in itself holds a lot more water. A lot of people don't realise that organic matter's not only adding nutrients but helping the water, the soil store water.
We've been talking about what's in this fantastic book that's about to be launched. And we've done the introduction and sort of built fields. But while interested in this area, it says retrofitting for bushfire defence, which would be very interesting to local people, even though it is focused on town. A lot of people live on small properties outside of town. So can you give us any sort of brief sort of description of what it's talking about here?
Yeah, so although that's a chapter in the built field, there's also chapters in the behavioural field as well about coping with disaster. So the built field section's very much about some practical things you can do to, you know, stop embers getting into your roof or, you know, some very practical advice, but that also extends out into the behavioural field and living resiliently and taking responsibility rather than waiting for authorities to help you out necessarily, and making connections with neighbours and forming small groups, and the importance of your neighbour's house as well as your own house if you're facing a bushfire.
Mm. Yeah, so this lends weight to your initial thing that permaculture is so much more than just a garden, but it's actually the relationships to the earth and garden around you, but also your neighbours and your place in that community.
Yep. It's a great way of putting it.
Any bits to add there, Richard?
Yeah, what I was thinking about was how David talks about we need to consider staying and defending properties, which sort of goes against the grain a little bit of the approach safer places type thing. So he's much more of the approach of, let's prepare ourselves well and defend against bushfire.
Okay. Also on that, before we move on, it's got so retrofitting for shared living. What's this meaning? We've all got to bunk in together, does it?
You don't have to say it in quite such a negative tone, though.
I'm just trying to keep you on your toes there, Beck, so make sure you know.
Yeah. So we have got enormous houses by world standard. Australian houses are huge. So far from having a housing crisis, we've actually got an oversupply of beds and rooms and room indoors. So, you know, one of the things that makes sense in suburbia is to have more people living in the existing housing stock we've got, especially because prices, rent or, you know, mortgages are huge. Why not have more people in each house and save money for everyone and leave more resources or work less or so many other things you could be doing with your money or time?
Okay, sounds good. All right, let's move on to the next area. It's called the biological field, patterns of life and growth. And there's a whole lot of things in here: garden farming, building and maintaining soil fertility, domestic animals. How do goats go in the backyard? Neighbours won't be too happy if they eat all their prize roses, will they?
No. But anyone sees the cover of the book, there is actually a suburban goat on the cover and a kid if you look carefully. So goats are possible in suburbia. If you can walk them, they'll take time, which gets back to that idea of spending more time at home. So you can do things like take your goat for a walk or go to the park and lop trees to feed it and bring it back and get out. And the milk supply is just amazing from a goat, so it really helps.
You have a bit of expertise this way, don't you? You're sort of
I'm a
goatee from way back.
Yes, I'm very much a goat person.
Excellent. Any thoughts there, Richard, or on the general biological field? You've got this example right here in Seymour, not with goats, but with chooks and ducks, and as absolutely what I describe as tiny but highly productive backyard. Do you want to talk a little bit about that as an example?
Yeah, so what I was aiming to do in that project was to show what's possible, and it's been great to have the opportunity to present it in this way in the book so that people can sort of see that this is real. Mm. One of the things that I was hesitant with is in doing something like this is talking about what's possible without having some real life examples.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what we've done, we produce quite a lot of our own fresh food on site. There are, of course, things that doesn't make sense to grow at home, like bulk foods and grains and things like that. Mm. But, yeah, we're fairly self-reliant, and it allows us to spend a lot of time at home.
Yeah. The notion with this whole book and retrofitting is not necessarily like aiming for complete self-sufficiency, is it? It's still wanting to be connected. Talk about how that might fit in with localities or locales, again, supporting each other to, you know, you can't produce the wheat, but maybe the person down the road can. Is that part of it too, would you just say?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. There's a section in there about the retro suburban diet.
Right.
Yeah, so it's looking at the type of food that we can transition to that has less energy demands, but also is more locally focused.
Yeah, all right, excellent. All right, you're listening to Earth Chat. We've been going through the book and looking at, you know, the scene, patterns of human habitats, the biological environment. So what we'd like to talk about now is a few of the examples that are listed in the book of what people are already doing. So it's not like it's only coming from theory, it's coming from people's actual practice that they've been engaged with. Richard Telford has his own example here in downtown Seymour. So Richard, talk a little bit more about that or the other examples that are in the book.
Yeah, so we wanted to show different sorts of examples of how people have adapted using these principles and sort of direction that's sort of outlined in the book. And one of those is of a place called Ecoburbia, which is in Fremantle in WA. And they had a very interesting approach. There was a couple, Shani and Tim, who bought a rather large Italian-style sort of double brick house. But one of the things that attracted about them to this particular place was it was on a quarter-acre block, which is quite rare in Fremantle these days. So rather than build a second dwelling on it like is most common, they decided to actually retrofit the house and set it up as different apartments. So there's like three apartments in the house with a common space, and they've also got the like another outbuilding which they've set up as another little unit. So they've become benevolent dictators of their own little realm.
And they've got goats.
They've got goats too. Yeah.
We talked before, if you haven't heard the earlier part of the show, about urban goats and taking them for a walk around the streets of Seymour. We'll be looking forward to seeing that. So, what else have they? What other examples or things have people done that might be of relevance here?
Well, another example is in a city, Melbourne, by Kat Lavers. She's got a small block of land, a terraced house in Northcote, and she's been gradually retrofitting her home and fitting it out with insulation and doing a kitchen up and that kind of thing, but also introducing small animals. She's a big fan of quails.
Right.
Because she's got such a small amount of land, she can't really afford to have a goat or even chickens.
But also the other interesting thing is she's got soil contamination there, which is a big urban issue, and that was another factor in choosing quail because she could keep them off the contaminated soil in a way that she couldn't for chickens. So
the quail are food, or do they do just pest control, or what's their sort of job in this permacultural design?
A bit of both, but a lot of eggs. They're tiny eggs, but they're beautiful if you've ever seen a quail, but they lay, you know, a higher proportion of their body weight than chickens, so they're efficient at producing eggs, even if they are small.
Okay, so you just need more, but they're still nutritious and yummy.
Yep. Mm.
Tell us a little bit about the cover. This cover of this encyclopedia, as I'm calling it, is beautiful. There's a picture of a person on a bicycle, but it's no normal bicycle. It has three kids. It's like a cargo bike. A whole lot of food on the front and a goat looking like it's eating something out of a gorgeous photo. Tell us a little bit about that one.
So that's a property in Melbourne called Hibby Farm.
Yep.
And it's two families that live in the one house.
Yep.
And as we mentioned, they have goats and they produce a lot of their food on the property. It's about probably a quarter acre block.
Yeah.
But one of the really interesting things about this particular place is that they're pretty well established there. They've made connections with their friends to purchase and rent properties nearby. And there's actually about eight properties that link together via a common path that they've kind of given access to the hoodies, they call themselves.
Right. Okay.
And one of the things I find really interesting about this is it's not just a line of houses along a street.
Yep.
It crosses streets and goes through... Yeah, so it actually goes through a number of different properties.
We're taking the fences down, so there's a lot of areas where there's no fences, or there's a gate between the two.
Yeah, okay. Well, that probably segues nicely into the next part of the book, because we've been through the setting, the scene, the built field, the biological field, and this one gets into the behavioural field. So that's that part that we were talking earlier about permaculture being more than just gardening and chooks and goats, but about how we actually live together and organise ourselves. Can you talk a little bit about this sort of section of the book?
Yeah, I think it's a really a key one. Like, if we don't change our behaviour, it's no point with anything else. But the other thing that's interesting about it in terms of Australian suburbia is how many renters we've got, and not everyone can do retrofits to their houses, like divided up like Ecoburbia has, or even do much to their gardens, but absolutely everyone can change their behaviour. So it's, really important set of, set of ideas and patterns and
values into action sort of thing. So what's some examples that we've got here? Transport and travel. I came on my bicycle today and so did Richards. I suppose that's an example, is it? But what other sort of things are we talking about in there in terms of the sort of changes that we might be able to make?
Well, one way to improve fuel efficiency is to put another person in the car, which is a really easy thing to do.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So rather than always travelling on your own, looking at what opportunities there are for car sharing.
Yeah, and also consider picking up a hitchhiker. Or being a hitchhiker.
Or not having a car at all. I mean, that's a big behaviour change. And one of the case studies, not in the book but on the accompanying website, is based around a family who've given up both their cars and live a very nice life without them.
Yeah, okay. Mm. Easier in the suburbs than those of us folks that live out of town.
Yep.
But still, I manage to ride. I live 12 k's out of Seymour and manage to ride in now and then if I got to pick up a lot of stuff, like tins of chickpeas. I don't always manage to do that, but okay.
Or car sharing. I mean, we've got another mini example in there of a family who own one car between them, their neighbours. So they use it when it's needed, but otherwise they use bikes and walk.
And there's car sharing schemes, particularly in the cities now, aren't there, that you can engage in. Well, look, I noticed another one here called health, disability and ageing, one that's very relevant to myself. Hopefully not the disability yet, but the ageing bit. What are we talking about there in terms of permaculture?
It's such an interesting topic because it gets into the, you know, the idea of what the future's going to be like, and will we have a medical system that can support an ageing population, and potentially, if not, how we can look after, you know, our elderly or, you know, the less well at home and strategies for that. as a, you know, perhaps an extended family or groups of neighbours, and, you know, people chipping in and helping out and taking on some of those jobs that at the moment we're outsourcing to hospitals or aged homes or other places.
Again, it's this promotion of community that you're talking about. Does the book talk at all about sort of intentional communities like co-housing and these sort of models where people are actually organising together specifically, or is that just an inference?
Yeah, it comes into that. It's not a big feature of the book, but mentioned now and then. It's more focused specifically on smaller families and households, but certainly co-housing's not forgotten as a topic.
Yeah. The last part is retro suburban neighbourhood vision. So how would you describe that as a summary point? What is the vision here?
Well, it's a nice little wrap-up in the way... Earlier we were talking about Aussie Street as a story introducing a whole lot of concepts. At the end, we've got vision of what a community could look like down the track. And, you know, there's a co-housing block in there. There's various neighbourhoods all doing different things, and they've all taken patterns from the book and implemented them. So it's sort of like a little summary of all these things and how they could be put together in one neighbourhood.
Yeah, sounds fantastic. Any other bits there, Richard? No? All right, what I now want to ask you is, well, okay, talk to me about how is this relevant to residents in Seymour? I mean, you've talked, Richard, about your place that already exists. How might this be useful for people of Seymour? What might they do? Have a look at it? Come up with ideas?
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of... I think you can look through the book and find individual... a thing in there that inspires you to take action and apply one little thing and another little thing and gradually build up a repertoire of building your home up. One of the aspects of the book that I find most attractive is the idea that we can build community where we are in suburbia, in the home that we live. Sometimes we think that the grass is greener somewhere else, that the community is going to be great when I move somewhere else, but we have community where we live. We build up relationships with people. We know our neighbours. And I think it's really important to value that and build on that.
And in fact, as I understand it, one of the permaculture principles is that you start in a zone and that zone is the one closest to where you are and build out. So in some ways, looking at this book, if you looked at it all and thought, oh my goodness, how am I going to achieve all this? You don't need to. You do, as you said, one part that works for you and keep building on it, but use this as a reference. Would that be a fair comment?
Yeah, that's the way I'd approach it.
Yep. And there's a whole lot of different patterns and ideas, and Holmgren's throwing them out there very much as this isn't a template. These are a whole lot of ideas that you can try, and some will work and some might not be appropriate for your situation. But the good thing about the book is it's very much focused on Southeast Australia. So Seymour's right in the zone that it's written for. It can be applied further out and practically to anywhere with a rich, you know, suburban population, but it's particularly applicable to southeastern Australia in terms of soils and climates and our culture.
All right. So we've talked about the book. It isn't yet officially launched. What's happening there?
Well, we've got a launch down in Melbourne coming up on the 10th of Feb.
On Saturday?
Next Saturday.
Next Saturday.
So it's not far away. And that's going to be at the Sustainable Living Festival at Fed Square with Costa, the Gardening Australia.
He's helping launch it. He's done the introduction to it, the forward, hasn't he?
Yes,
excellent.
Yeah.
And so how do folks find that? Does that cost money? Do they just get down there to Fed Square and listen to it? And what else might be happening there that would be relevant? I think David's doing a talk there.
It's just a matter of turning up. It's there's the permaculture garden set up for the whole of Sustainable Living Festival. So the launch will be happening there. Formidable Vegetable Sound System, a great permaculture band, will be playing. No need to book or anything. What else? There's a forum the next day that David's speaking at, as well as some other urban, great urban thinkers, including Kat Lavers, who Richard was talking about before as a case study.
Yeah.
It's 11 o'clock, I think, the launch.
I'm not sure. You can check out the SLF website.
There's also a website, retrosuburbia.com, which has all that information as well.
Yeah, okay. All right, very good. Look, I also just wanted to get... The actual production of this book was a work in itself in many ways, wasn't it? that it's like talking about how we work as a community, but in many ways was a community that actually helped produce this book. Is that fair comment? And what would you add there?
Absolutely. If you look at the acknowledgements, there's over 70 people named, and you know, we had a celebration that, you know, 300 people, over 300 people who have been involved in some way could have come along to. But yeah, there has been a small core of people as well, but it's David Hongren's book, but it's very much a team effort in so many ways.
Yeah. And both of you were actively involved in that. You were tag team with the project management, I believe.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So tell us just quickly what happened there.
Well, I started working with David, meeting with him once every 2 weeks for probably 2 years.
2 years.
To support him in keeping the project, keeping the writing happening.
Yeah.
The handover happened when we realised that we decided that I was going to take on doing the layout of the book, and it was going to be such a mammoth effort in a short period of time that I couldn't continue project management, and that's when Beck took over.
Oh.
And actually just before that point, we decided on the illustrator, who just happened to be woofing at Meliodora at David Hongren's property.
Woofing being?
Woofing being willing workers on organic farms.
Okay, so this person was a volunteer, just happened to be there. And did nice drawings and went, you're in.
Yeah, amazing watercolour artist. So the watercolours in the book are...
The picture is... The book is beautiful. There's a lot of fantastic graphics and a rich amount of photographs, which makes it easy to sort of flick through and look at. It's an attractive book.
Yep.
So the photographs, did you assemble them or they were...
A lot of them are from David's own archives that he's been taking for years, but there's also some taken specifically by Oliver Hongren for especially the case studies.
Oliver and being David's son.
Yep.
Yeah. And Sue Dennett's son.
And Sue Dennett's son, yes. And there's also a whole lot put out, contributed by other people. So, again, that real community thing. David identified some gaps and said, you know, hi, everyone, has anyone got these photos? Yeah. And people sent them in. And
fantastic. It's beautiful. So Seymour, what's happening with it in relation to Seymour, Richard? I think you were talking off air a bit earlier.
Other than today's interview, there's quite a bit actually happening in Seymour. So we've got a book distribution business which is based in Seymour.
Yeah.
And so we're distributing permaculture books.
Yep.
And we're working with Wine by Sam as a place to store books.
Yep.
We're looking at an event that's coming up in May where David's going to come and talk about do a presentation about retro suburbia.
Yep. Where will people find out about that? Will it be in the local paper? Is there a date yet? Or
we'll find
it. And through undoubtedly Earth Chat and community announcements on 103.9 Seymour FM, your local station.
Yes.
So if you stay tuned, you'll find out about it.
But there will be notification when we confirm dates and times and locations. But it'll be in mid-May sometime.
Okay. All right. We look forward to that.
Yep.
And if people want to purchase it, how do they?
It's currently available as a pre-purchase from holmgren.com.au. And it will also be available through permacultureprinciples.com.
If people Googled retro suburbia, would they find it that way too?
Yes.
Okay, so one word, retro suburbia, or through Holmgren, Holmgren, .com.au.
We've also got a pretty extensive website called retrosuburbia.com, which has a lot more case studies in it, and it's available to... you can take your time and look through the different case studies of different examples that might be closer to the way that you live your life. And there's also extended writings that sort of add on to the book as well.
And there's also a Facebook page, Retro Suburbia Community or Group. So if you're not in the Seymour area and don't know too many people, that's a good way to connect with others.
And... is it going to be available at the Seymour Library if people want to drop in?
Undoubtedly so. I have no doubt.
Not probably just yet, but hopefully after the launch.
Yes.
If it's not, you ask at the library for Retro Suburbia and see whether they can get a copy. Mind you, it needs to probably be launched and distributed first, which has still got a week and a bit away.
We're still waiting for the stock to come in.
But look forward to that being available. Yeah.
Now, one thing that we haven't mentioned yet is the price.
Oh, yes.
Yes, so it's $85.
Yeah.
Which I think for the size and the scale of the work, it's full colour. I think it's good value.
And what printed in Australia?
Printed in Australia, that's a very important part
of the process.
Yeah, so this is part of the notion that the permaculture, the whole process, has been relevant. It's printed in with good printing materials, printed locally. It does mean it's a little more expensive, but good value. I'm going to move on because before we close, I want to make a few announcements about some local things, but I want to give a special thank you to Beck, who's come down from Heathcote this morning as project manager and chief text wrangler of this fantastic new tome by David Holmgren, Retro Suburbia. And thanks, Richard, for cycling in from around the corner. And look forward to more on Retro Suburbia. All right, last but not least, probably, if you're interested in Beam Mitchell Environment Group, don't forget to check out our website, www.beam.org.au. You can find out information there about what's happening with Beam events and become a member, get active, and yay to Retro Suburbia. All right, thank you. This is the end of Earth Chat for this week. Phil Bourne signing off, 103.9 FM. Look forward to you joining us next week. Thank you.